Good morning, Colorado Springs. It's another brighter day in the neighborhood. I'm your host, Angela Jones, and today I'll ask you to join me in welcoming Shane Sherman.
Thanks, Angela.
It's nice to have you here. So, Shane, you're the president of 18 Sierra Financial. So that's like, 18 Sierra, that sounds military.
Very military, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the background on 18 Sierra is in the Army, there's a designator for all occupations.
Correct.
And the Green Beret designator was 18 series, and then there's, kind of sub-bullets of that. Mm-hmm. But I changed series to Sierra for the phonetic alphabet. Now, most military folks will kind of pick up on it.
Yeah.
But I try to keep it to my heritage, what I really respect and admire. So I wanted to kind of keep the tradition alive in the business world.
All right. Were you a Green Beret when you were in the military?
I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We didn't talk about this. We were talking a little bit earlier before we went on the air, but my father was a Green Beret.
Really?
Yeah,
That's cool. Where did he serve?
In Vietnam.
Okay.
And he passed when I was about two.
Sorry.
And so I actually those shadow boxes that a lot of retired military or folks build after they pass, people built them with the flag and all the ribbons. My husband actually built one of those out for me because I didn't have a lot of history on that, but he found my father's family and got his service records and things like that and built it all out. So my husband's really the one who could navigate all that, but he's the 35-year, 36 years really, Army veteran.
Who's counting?
Yeah. And I just tagged along for the last 20 or so. Right.
Well, the amount of effort that is put in by families and especially spouses during deployment is substantial.
Yeah.
Not given enough credit. In my opinion.
Now, I know you have worked with, besides, being a Green Beret, you've worked with other services as well.
I have. So I was actually a contractor when I got out of the military for a brief period of time. So I did train Army, Marines, and SEALs going to Afghanistan. So kind of 2010 to 2013.
Yeah.
And transitioned out of that and got involved with the NFL and a startup with some buddies of mine. Who are fellow Green Berets who played football at West Point. We had some good connections into the NFL and provided team building and leadership development for NFL teams and did that a couple of years, which was really fun and cool.
Yeah.
The margins weren't as strong as we had hoped from the business perspective.
Right,
and my kids were fairly young at the time, so I needed to, put bread on the table and get after something that was a little more meaningful and providing for them.
Yeah. So tell me more about that. Like, just breaking that down, like when you're taking the leadership principles that you learn in the military and applying that. Okay. And I mean, there's books been written on this by a variety of guys, but most of those, authors or speakers or whatever have like their key bullet points that they really rely on. And, how does that transfer to the business world or how does that transfer to the sports world?
Yeah. I'd say from the sports perspective, human capital is how you designate leadership development.
Okay.
So in the NFL, for instance, how do you put a win on the board and how do you translate that to locker room or on the field behavior?
Okay.
Right? So there's typically attributes that people associate with leadership to some degree.
Right.
So our challenge was, hey, we're going to come in and help you improve those attributes from a leadership perspective and the locker room. So these individuals are more apt to be better teammates and better leaders on and off the field. Now, off the field was a big challenge. Obviously, that's a different topic.
Yeah.
But if you're able to improve those attributes, you hopefully can put points on the scoreboard.
So, can you give me an example of like one or two of those key attributes that you would really kind of focus on, particularly with the NFL players?
Yeah. So with the NFL, a couple of things that we did work on was, mental toughness.
Okay.
You know,
that surprises me because you would think that football players who have been taking hits since, peewee football.
Well, physical toughness, absolutely. But
okay.
Mental toughness, on the other hand, that's a whole nother ballgame, right? In the military, if you're deployed for years on end and you're getting in combat, you see some of the worst things possible. You either become resilient because
true.
Of it.
Okay.
And you grow to it.
Right.
Or you don't. And
yeah.
oftentimes in the NFL, these guys off the field will let it out in different ways if they've had an issue on the field, right? So their behaviors off the field oftentimes manifest failures on the field.
Okay.
So some of the things that we worked on was just being able to relate that toughness on and off the field so they wouldn't have as many issues personally and professionally.
So it's interesting you would bring that up because, you know, one of the things that I like, so, you know, I've had this idea anyway that some people are more physical and some people are more, you know, emotional, or some people are more, you know, mental. You know, they tend to kind of exist in one of those three areas more comfortably, you know, and I've always sort of thought of myself as, you know, someone who's just can be more in my head. I'm a thinker.
Right.
And then I've really struggled, you know, emotions are, I can navigate them fine, but when it comes to like, you know, get out there and, you know, suck it up. And I think we had a team training recently where someone's like, who else likes me, loves to do a super great high intensity workout. And I was like, Not me. You know, kind of thing. Sorry, sister, can't join you on that. But that I've often equated that lack of a physical toughness to a deficit of mental toughness in myself.
Okay.
You know, like I can't make myself push through or, you know, be resilient in that area. And so it's interesting to me that, and I'm thinking through, you know, people I've known, but you know, and what comes to mind is that new movie Dog, you know, where you had, you know, the guys, the Channing Tatum's character was like, I mean, he was, you know, big, you know, brute, could walk, you know, miles and miles and miles, but he was a wreck from just a, you know, emotional standpoint and, you know, getting into all manner of mess because of it. And, you know, the dog, the end of the movie basically brought him through, you know, to the other side to kind of care about himself again and those types of things. But, you know, so it may be that, you know, what you're saying just making me sort of think.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's certain things that physical toughness can help with mental toughness, but not necessarily by any means. I think people go through traumatic experiences that are not physical.
Mm.
Or even experiences that aren't, and you can still create lessons learned from those traumatic experiences in order to improve your resiliency from a mental toughness perspective. You know, it doesn't have to be just sports. I think they're exuded in sports more often than not.
Right.
But even in the workplace, you know.
It's just more out there.
Right.
I mean, it's all out there on the field. You can't hide it. Yeah. Exactly.
So, but in the business world, you know, if an employee's having an issue or, you know, they you're getting out of line or they disrespect or something along the lines, there might be a deeper root cause issue that's manifesting the behavior. And maybe, and it's not saying that they're not mentally tough. It's just there's ways to improve that mental toughness. So you can come into a situation that you know there's going to be conflict. How do you maybe de-escalate or be self-aware enough to say, all right, I'm starting to ramp up. I'm starting to amp up. How do I calm myself down so I can, you know, handle the situation a little more appropriately? That to me is mental toughness. Like you have the wherewithal to do that.
Right. And I've often heard it described that, like, you know, people who are dealing, like, you know, anger in particular, they either turn it outside or inside. Mm-hmm. Anger turned outside, of course, is, you know, arguments and violence and, you know, things of that. But turned internally, it can become depression.
Right.
You know, anxiety, different kind of things. So if you don't learn how to navigate those. So, but you've coached other sports teams as well.
To a degree. I briefly coached the Air Force Academy at their rugby team. Okay. Played rugby in college. My kids are trying to get me to coach basketball, so slowly getting into that. But we'll see how that goes.
Well, I met them here. That you have twin boys.
Twin boys, yeah.
Right.
William and Wyatt.
Okay.
Yep. When we were first born, I was trying to get my wife to name him William Wallace and Wyatt Earp. she's like, you're an idiot. And I'm like,
well, yes, but can we do it anyway?
Let's do it anyway. So William was after my good buddy that was killed in Afghanistan, actually, kind of my mentor. Mm. And then Wyatt was actually supposed to be my name when I was born, but they changed it, you know, a few days after I was born.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, on the paperwork. So
what's the story behind that?
They just felt Shane was a better, you know, maybe the look. Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Your mom told your dad, no,
yeah,
you're an idiot. It's Shane, not Wyatt, right?
But having twins, I think, you know, we had the boys, and we're like, that was the first 6 months were tough.
Yeah.
You know, the twins. Right. So we were up both nights and just taking turns and helping one another.
Right. And they're a little athletes. They showed up here in their soccer gear.
Yeah. Yeah. They're a little beast.
Yeah. I know. We had the conversation. So, well, my boys, I have two boys and one girl, but okay. my boys, the oldest one was a swimmer and he was an ODP, you know, in swimming. And then, Will was, my William was a soccer player and he did ODP with soccer.
Right.
And so there's a whole, this breed there. Maybe that's why I don't think I'm very tough, because these guys are, they're complete beast mode. And of course my husband is, you know.
Yeah, but look what you're doing. Like, most people can't come in here and do this.
Well, true story. Or at least they don't put themselves out there to do it.
Right.
You know, they probably can.
Right.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that hard. You know, but
I think it takes a lot of courage.
Oh, well, thanks. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. So, getting back to what you're doing now, and you're teaching classes. You're maybe going to coach basketball. So, and you're teaching MBA courses. Is that right?
I had started MBA at UCCS, and then I had taught undergraduate programs.
Okay.
And executive education. I've taken the last 6 to 8 months off, so I haven't taught anything. Just with the new venture going on, I haven't had the time
right
to really dedicate and. I was the first one in my family to go to college.
All right.
Wow. So, you know, in the classroom, I've always wanted to be practical with the students, and I wouldn't bullshit them. Right. Mm-hmm, I'm very honest, but at the same time, want to challenge them in a way that's different than what they traditionally see in higher ed.
Right.
I think higher ed has taken a shift over the years, maybe not in the best direction, where I think that we should be focused on, you know, wisdom and your most articulate self. And mm-hmm. I think we've gotten away from that in higher ed. Mm. You know, today I'd probably recommend my kids, you know, go vocational.
Exactly.
Or, you know, trade, something.
Absolutely.
Like my mother-in-law, before she passed, always said, hey, get a degree that ends in ING.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's you can make money with that.
Yeah.
You know, so I look back on that and I'm like, well, I my degree was in economics, and I was like, oops.
Economics though is it to me, that's an area I've really gotten into recently, and I want to talk to you more about that, because I think there's a big tie-in with what you're doing now in your current business. But tell me more about your family. You said you're the first one to go to school in your family.
Yep.
Or to college.
Yep. So grew up in North Dakota, but my kind of had a rough upbringing. My folks split up when I was young. Mm. My brother went with my father. Mm. My mom remarried. So I enlisted at 17 from North Dakota and got right into the Army.
Right.
And it was just too colder for me. So I wanted to get out of there.
Yeah. I have a good friend from I think she's from North Dakota. She's from one of the Dakotas.
Right.
I don't know that there's a market difference.
Oh, there is.
Is there? No. Oh, I'm sorry.
That was
probably not the right thing to say, right?
No, more of a running joke. We're all related up there anyway. There's like six of us.
So. And I was really meaning the weather. I was really meaning the cold.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there are very distinct differences.
No worries.
So, but you went and got your economics degree. What did what type of things did your mom do coming up?
She was a florist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then after my father took off, she went back and got her dental hygienist degree certification.
Yeah,
So she was retired as a dental hygienist.
Yeah. You know what's amazing? It's like I feel the same way that you describe your mom as, is that you really, if you're going to go to school, then it should qualify you to do a job,
right?
To do something, to bring value. And I have nothing against people self-actualizing,
sure.
You know, but you know, I don't think it's a great idea to self-actualize to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars student debt.
No, it's no way to start a life.
You know, at all. You know, it's tough enough.
How can you afford a home,
mm-hmm.
right? Even a vehicle. You know, how do you build assets and wealth for yourself and your children?
Right.
If you're burdened with debt at the beginning of it, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I don't think just erasing all student debt is the solution.
Right.
Because what does that tell people? All right. And those who did pay it off.
Yeah.
You know, who worked hard or had a second or third job and did that. So there are other ways that you can make a great living in life and find meaning.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's not just money. Maybe there's meaning behind what you want to do.
Right. And I think that from my understanding, some of the debt that's been forgiven thus far, that occurred because the higher education institutions were really misrepresenting to students, you know, what value they could get. And, you know, I don't know what responsibility the federal government really bears for that, but, you know, spreading it out basically to taxpayers is, you know, kind of, it's a rough way to go, but that's a rock and a hard place kind of thing.
Right. But if tuition's at $55,000 a year for an out-of-state student at Boulder, that's a heavy pill to swallow. So the way that I've seen it, you know, the research that I've seen has been, I think there's been a decrease in the number of tenured faculty, and there's been an increase in the number of adjunct faculty. So I would be an adjunct at UCCS. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot more adjuncts in the pool doing more work for less money.
Right.
The average pay for an adjunct per course is $2,000 to $4,000.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you need to teach a ton of courses just to like have a decent, in our society, a decent wage. But the middle staff within higher ed has become bigger, more administration. There's a trade-off, right? And to me, it's still about students' education.
Right.
And how does kind of metal meet the road? And I think it's still in the classroom.
So in what you're doing now, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but a big part of what you're doing is providing an education piece in the financial services sector. Is that correct?
So when I teach, it's been leadership and organizational development at UCCS. Right. My firm now at 18 Sierra Financial will do private business lending.
Right.
Yep. We'll get into some equity, meaning that we'll come in and maybe acquire a business or acquire a portion of their business, but that's very rare. We try and stay on the debt side of the house.
Okay.
So either myself or some partner lenders will come in and do the loan when maybe a bank can't do it.
Sure.
And we first got started in COVID. Are you familiar with Red Leg Brewing?
I am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Red Leg, I got to know Todd Baldwin, the owner over there. Good guy. He's got a strong business, good head on his shoulders. He had trouble getting a loan.
Were you the guy he got the million from to start?
Yeah. So he contacted me and said, hey, can you help me out? And I was like, I don't know. Maybe.
Todd came on our program and he was telling us all about it. He just kind of, he just went for it. I mean, you don't want to talk about guts.
He's got a lot of guts and I have a lot of respect for the guy for doing that.
And his setup over there is so cool.
It is really neat.
It's fun. Yeah.
He's got a good thing going and he should keep it going. I think he's a role model for a lot of young business owners and entrepreneurs in the community. So he called me and I got my family and two other families engaged. So we put together $1 million line of credit for him for three years. Just paid it off, by the way.
Fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was the first deal and I didn't intend on going this route, but after it happened, I started getting more phone calls.
Uh-huh.
Hey, can you help? Can you do this? So I launched my firm 18 Sierra Financial late last year and then started getting into commercial real estate. Equipment lending, SBA that I can work with some preferred partners on because you have to be qualified to do an SBA loan.
Yeah.
Unsecured lending or asset-based lending. And then I can help just navigate the financial waters for an entrepreneur or business owner. That's my education and I'm really strong at it. I came from the publicly traded firm where I did some of that work.
Mm-hmm.
So just know it very well. But my goal is let's help business owners achieve their goals. And you need money to do so. And right now the cost of debt is cheap.
Yeah.
For now.
Right.
That's interest rates are going up. So careful. But cost of debt is still cheaper than the cost of equity. And what that means is it's easier to finance your company through debt than through the money that you make in your own company.
That's true. And let's just, I know we're probably getting close on time, but, because time always catches up. Anytime I'm getting like, okay, let's guess this just got real interesting. When we talk about you do that economics overlay and, you're talking about money being cheap right now and it may stay cheap. But, if you were to finance something at this point in time to allow you, allow a business, for instance, to go ahead and expand or, get into a capital investment with inflation being what it is, the locking in that price now, even if the interest rate is marginally higher here in the, say next 6 months or what have you, it's still going to be a better deal for a small business owner than waiting, saving, as the money that they're bringing into their firm or into the business is devalued.
Yep. Yeah, and I'd say along with that, most loans you can refinance. Mm-hmm. Most business loans you can refinance. Now, though, I would just, anybody listening, double check to make sure that on prepayment penalties and what how long they are. So if you lock something in, am I locked in for 10 years? Right. You shouldn't be. Now, commercial real estate typically only goes up to five years.
That's what ours is on our commercial, commercial building.
So, you know, when you, but that's on a, you know, maybe a 30-year fixed. If it's a short-term loan, typically the prepayment penalties are a little shorter in duration. So just something to be cognizant and weary of, as well as any origination fees that might, you know, pop up. Typically, you might see them in distressed equipment or distressed debt, but a little bit different market than some folks might be in. I think interest rates will go up this year. I think it's wiser to lock in now.
Right.
If you're on an SBA 7A and you have a variable rate, I would highly recommend looking elsewhere and getting something fixed.
Getting something fixed.
Yeah, most of the folks that I'm seeing right now are a lot of SBA 7As. That are variable. So I'm really trying to push them into something fixed because they could get hit very reminiscent of the early 80s.
But you don't think things are like the early 80s. It's a different, it may have a similar outcome, you know, in terms of like like me as a consumer or like me as a person trying to run a household. It may seem the same, you know, just in terms of the net result. But in terms of the reasons why we're here, from an economics expert, you know, perspective, do you think it's the same or different?
I think there's corollaries. I don't think it's the same. I think the journey has a bit of a similar destination.
Yeah, and that's what I would agree that it's the potential is there.
Yeah, but inflation's reminiscent. To a degree, but we've seen oil spike to its highest, and I don't know, 30 years ish today. You know, I think when you look at not only inflation but the Federal Reserve and monetary policy and what they're looking to do to stem it, if they increase interest rates, theoretically, that should lower inflation.
Right.
Monetary law.
Right.
However, if they don't do that quickly enough, we'll continue to see inflation go up. Money is cheap right now, right? So that's why prices continue to go up. It's not just a supply chain issue, right? There's a monetary issue at play here.
There is. And part of that is that, at least from my perspective, is there's been so much money printed and provided, you know, by way of, you know, what I would say is probably necessary subsidies, you know, due to the COVID, you know, especially early on. But these various props that the federal government is infusing to keep the economy rolling when things, you know, had to, you know, contract from a business standpoint, what it's ended up doing, it's been driving prices up, especially in the asset realm. And then you have, you know, this is how like the richer keep getting richer, is because then they end up with all this excess money, and then they go and they're buying buildings and, you know, bigger assets, more assets for more and more money.
Right.
And that's really causing, you know, the separation, even a larger separation between sort of like your average, you know, small business owner, individual, you know, wage earner or what have you, and the top 1%. And I'm not meaning to vilify, you know, the 1% or the top of the 1% either. I think it's just a reality that has to be, you know, understood.
Yeah, there's definitely slack, you know, in the economy, and people were, so we want things right now.
Yeah.
You know, so if you go to the grocery store and something's not there, there is slack because money is cheap, and we've been able to accrue more of it over the last 2 years because of a lot of these incentives. Right. Now, I'm not saying businesses, but I'm saying society in general. So when you go out and purchase these things, that creates could create a supply issue.
Yeah.
But to me, that is not the root cause of the problem.
Yeah.
By any means. So I think, you know, I don't have a glass ball to look through, but history can be a good lesson for us here. And I think very reminiscent of 80-81, the Volcker rule when they implemented higher interest rates in order to curb the inflation. So we'll see it. We'll see what happens. The Federal Reserve said in 2 weeks they're going to increase the rate. So
I don't know. I just know I pulled all my money out of everything and it's sitting in the bank. I'm going to put it in my mattress soon.
Well, that is one option.
I'm kidding. That is one option. Call my grandma. She said, put your money in your mattress.
My father-in-law would say the same thing, actually.
So, well, I mean, you got to look out.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, I appreciate you looking out for, you know, so many local veterans and small business owners. And how can people get a hold? How can people sure. get in touch with you, either, you know, if they may have a need for your services or know somebody who could use them.
Yeah. So if anybody is in need of my services, they can go to 18sierrafinancial.com.
Okay.
I've got a local number right there at the top that'll contact my office. I've got an email on there. I'm actively monitoring because I really appreciate folks who get in touch with me and I want to do the best that I can for them. So,
is that the same if someone, and I know you had originally brought people in who want to, you know, pool resources to provide that type of private funding for folks. Is that the same number that someone would contact you if they were interested in that? Or are you even open to that type of thing?
I am open to it. I'm actively building a larger community fund.
Okay.
Right now. Looking to raise $15 million in order to help local businesses on the private debt side.
Okay.
Doesn't mean we wouldn't get into the equity piece, like, but kind of similar to what we did for Red Leg.
Right.
Want to expand that and really focus on the community along the Front Range here in El Paso
sure.
County, help our community and steward us for the next, you know, 50 to 100 years. And we do that through business.
Right. Absolutely. It's really booming. I mean, Colorado Springs, since we got here, has just, you know, grown tremendously. And I don't just mean in terms of residential building and what have you, but just it's really, it's been pretty astounding what's happened here in the last 9 years.
Right. And so investors, if you're interested, you can get in touch with me the same way. There are other ways to get in touch. info@18sierrafinancial.com. I monitor that one fairly frequently, so that's another good way to do that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Shane.
Thanks, Angela.
And thank you all for joining us. You can join us here every week at the same time and same station. And until we get time to spend with you again, have brighter days.